Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning or good afternoon, everyone, depending on which part of the world you're in, or which part of the US you're in, anyway. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a chance to take a step back and look at what's happening with health and nutrition in our modern world. Joining me, as always, are my very good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley F. Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Simon.
Good morning, Simon.
And how is lovely L.A. today?
It's been warm. We got all that heat from Texas that everyone was talking about. It was 107, 108 down the bottom of the hill. We live closer to the top, so a little bit cooler than us, but it was still about 100 to 101 degrees, which is not warm weather.
Expected to be 103 today.
Is it really?
Yes.
Ooh,
I'm not leaving the house.
I stumbled across an article this morning, but it's out of Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona. But I really think it would be more appropriate on the 405. Apparently, some enterprising hackers decided that they would reprogram one of those warning signs on the side of the road, you know, careful road construction ahead type deals. And they actually changed it to read Rogue Panda on Rampage.
That's very funny.
That sounds like something more like Caltech would do.
Right. Apparently this was reported at 3 a.m. on Monday morning, but it took the transportation department until 11 a.m. to actually get out, and it was a busy highway, and there was some genuine road construction going on, but it took them until 11, which is 8 hours later, to actually plug their laptop in and change it back to warning roadworks ahead.
Well, that's Arizona. They were probably arguing about who had to go out there.
Whatever happened to those hackers with Monsanto?
Anonymous?
Yeah, Anonymous.
Oh, they're still going.
Oh, they're still around. But the good news is Flagstaff Police Lieutenant Ken Koch told the Arizona Daily Sun that citizens can rest assured there are no problems with rogue pandas in the city.
That's great, Simon. I love it.
Well, I'm glad they haven't lost their sense of humor.
Absolutely.
But, you know, to get anybody, to even those the friends of mine who live there, and, you know, I have relatives live in Arizona, and they don't want to go out either. It's pretty awful out there.
Well, it's all those damn pandas.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about some of those hot weather countries like Guatemala, who's having a fight with Kellogg's. Can you believe that Kellogg has sent a cease and desist order to an archaeological group in Guatemala because they had the nerve to use a toucan as a logo on their various local products and businesses? Can you imagine that? Kellogg accused them of using Mayan imagery in the mark. Wow, next thing you know, they'll tell Mayans they can't do it.
Well, Toucan Sam's important, though. I mean, that's part of your Fruit Loop cereal, and you can't buy that dying junk if you don't see the toucan. If I were the toucan, I'd be the person suing.
Well, you know,
it's a pretty low bar, when Kellogg go after what I think it is a non-profit, and in fact they're just some people that have trowels and little paintbrushes, and say, hey, You've stolen our toucan.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love some of their comments in this press release. They've checked out Kellogg's sites and imageries and their little games for kids online, and it said, the thing is supposed to be Maya. It says, at best, it's culturally insensitive. I would characterize as a demeaning caricature of an advanced and ancient civilization about which your game developers know nothing. So apparently they took this toucan, created some phony-looking pyramids, and turned it into a child game. So Dr. Strada Ballet characterized Kellogg's claim as, quote, a bit like the Washington Redskins claiming trademark infringement against the National Congress of American Indians. I thought that was a great analogy. There are no, you know, there's no, toucans in Michigan where Kellogg resides. I think it's in Battle Creek, Michigan. So next time they have a toucan in a Guatemalan, you know, jungle, I guess they can claim it, right?
Well, isn't this kind of ridiculous? I mean, if a first grader decides they love a colorful toucan and start drawing it, does that mean that they're infringing on Toucan Sam and Kellogg's?
Uh-huh.
I mean, seriously.
Well, right. I mean, it begs the question, could Mr. T, go after the Indian nation of Mohawks for stealing the name?
That's a good one.
Great.
You know, that's a great one for a law school exam. Hey, and not limited to Kellogg's, let's go after one of my favorites, which is Coca-Cola, who lay around every day looking for some crazy name to sell their garbage to convince Americans to buy it. The one that bothered me most was Vitamin Water, that little kind of flavored water that was going around and still around, right? When it first came, I said, oh, God, you know, little vitamins and water, it's not a soft drink, whatever, and I drank a couple bottles, got deathly ill, and said, oops, that's off.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be a healthy thing because it was being sold at the vitamin store long before I knew.
So shortly into I started researching, found out it was mostly high fructose corn syrup, which, you know, always makes me very happy to know that I'm about to have more high fructose corn syrup. So recently, they got sued over this. So what do you think they said? They basically stood up, one of their lawyers said, in a lawsuit filed by the Center for Science and Public Interest, quote, this is in court briefs now, a quote, no consumer could reasonably be misled into thinking Vitamin Water was a healthy beverage. This was filed by Coca-Cola's own lawyers in a brief. And I got to say, as a lawyer, sometimes I used to get briefs from other lawyers and falling over laughing at the stupid admissions they're making. This one, they're admitting that they're selling basically junk and don't understand why Americans would read the title Vitamin Water and think it really had vitamins or was really healthy. Gee, Simon, what do you think of that?
Well, I'm speechless.
So this is what the judge said. Millions of consumers were misled into believing that this illusion was helped in no small part by Coca-Cola's advertising of Vitamin Water, which blatantly positions it as a health-enhancing beverage. So Coca-Cola is advertising Vitamin Water as a health-advancing beverage, which is nothing more than high fructose corn syrup and water, okay? And they basically implied that the product was made out of vitamins and water. But, of course, it isn't. Now, when they get caught at it, they go, oh, nobody could really reasonably believe me lying, because that's what they did. They get up every day, and they lie to the American public. And when they get caught, it sounds like Chick Hearn during a basketball game. Oh, no harm, no foul. Let's all move on. No big deal.
So are you telling us that this yellow vitamin water that looks like it's got the vitamin water, if it's yellow, it's going to be vitamin E, is actually dye sugar water?
That's right. It's a sugar containing a form of crystalline fructose, a processed sugar that's been linked to health problems.
But isn't this incredibly similar to the SlimFast debacle?
Yeah, sure. That and the word healthy choice, which we covered last Saturday. Healthy choice, which is not a healthy choice.
Okay. And here's a quote out of the lawsuit. from the. So in reality, vitamin water is really sugar water with addition of synthetic chemicals that happen to be called vitamins, which are not the natural plant-based nutrients your body would greatly prefer. So our message to everybody is, next time you look at that vitamin water, say, is this any different than regular sugar-filled Coca-Cola? Because the answer is, it's not. It's just a lie. So they want you to go up and look at the soft drinks and go, oops, I shouldn't drink Coca-Cola today. Ah, but here's vitamin water. So basically, Coca-Cola wants to get you coming or they're going to get you going.
And they love high fructose corn syrup. That seems to be one of their secret formulas. The secret of the recipe.
There's you know, a product that's been advertised quite a lot on television, at least in this area, and it's a tiny little bottle that you can squirt into your pure water, your water bottle. You can put as much or as little as you want in, and it's really good for you. I next time the advert comes on, I will make note of the product and do some research, but I'm pretty certain this is vitamin water revisited.
Sure it wasn't liquid cocaine from the cocaine cartels. Because everyone else is able to advertise and lie on TV. Why can't the cocaine cartels lie on TV?
Got a good point there, Manny.
And no different than Pfizer and Merck and the rest of them. They're all liars. Which brings me to, I want to discuss some recent attacks on everybody who's trying to push for better quality food. You know, we've raised this discussion a number of times on how the industry now are paying scientists, doctors, and people to write articles attacking anybody who's seeking either we're eco-terrorists or whatever the latest title is. Well, the latest one is they're now calling us anti-science hippies. You know, nothing made me laugh harder. I mean, I grew up in the 60s. I spent the 60s with short hair, with a white shirt and a thin black tie, working two jobs, raising one child, and working my way through college, and had a second child in the middle of law school. I had no time to be a long hair. I had no interest. So here I am, 67 years old, and finally, Simon, someone's called me a hippie. I don't know whether to complain or be happy about it. This is my last chance.
The problem is that the industry, big food and big pharma, are really having to reach deep. The movement against them is not going away. And they've tried to attack us with, our quote science, when we attack their quote science. They've tried to attack us through intermediaries, saying, oh, you're taking our jobs away, you don't know what you're talking about. And now it's just down to name-calling.
Right.
Hey, I'm proud to be a hippie.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. And Simon, if I had the hair to grow, I would grow it long.
Wow. Hey, dude. I had no idea.
So why are we saying this, Well, while we're researching, I found at least six or seven industry-sponsored articles. You know, those are the ones where Dreamright writes them or one of the big companies like ConAgra writes them and then pays somebody $25,000 to put their name on those type. And they all use the same words and they all have the same things. But I found a new group that we've got to discuss, the New England Complex System Institute. They describe themselves as investment futurists. That sounds like something out of a Philip K. Dick novel like Blade Runner or Paycheck or Minority, Report. If investment futurists, I have a doctorate. I have spent time going to millions of lectures and litigated every kind of business case in the world. And I've never heard anyone describe themselves as an investment futurist. I guess everybody on Wall Street could call themselves investment futurists because they're trying to sell everybody on future. But have you ever heard that term before, Simon?
No, I'm trying to come up with a definition.
You're not. You got to go to this New England Complex Systems Institute, which is formed by Harvard and all sorts of, you know, colleges on the East Coast. It's manned by these impressive PhDs and all the rest. But this is their mantra. Complexity theorists have some bad news for people who insist that unless it carries an organic label, food is evil.
So the name of this group is actually a complexity theorist group.
Well, that's what they call themselves,
okay.
A complexity theorist, okay? As well as investment futurists. So you won't find any definitions for complexity theorists either. Usually in history, complexity theorist is a woman who thinks her husband is sleeping with two women in the office. That's generally what people would call it. You know, it's definitely a theory. It's complex and it's bad, okay? So their whole theory is it's the price of food when it raises above a certain threshold. They list for instability that social unrest will sweep the planet.
And trigger riots.
Now,
that's what they're saying. We're going to all trigger riots.
Now, how complex is this? News to New England Complex Systems. Read Les Miserables. Okay, read the Russian classic Le Maire on why the Russian Revolution occurred. And for those of you who go to college, Edmund Taylor, the former chair at Harvard in the early 60s, it was 1962, wrote a seminal book called The Fall of the Dynasties. You don't need this institute to tell you that if you don't feed the people, you got a problem. What's our biggest problem in the United States? We have people homeless and starving. Unemployment is rising. The people from Appalachia all the way to Los Angeles who can't find meals, who don't have meals. There are literally school districts in Florida where all the children live in temporary housing, and they wonder why it causes instability.
And they're saying it's the price of food, that when the choice of the food is going to McDonald's and having an ammonia-toxic burger versus having a full organic piece of food,
well,
even a fruit without any pesticides in it, come on. And we're not talking let's institute a riot. They need to clean up their business.
Well, how about this? You can get $3 meals at McDonald's for the price of one thing of organic milk. How about a bag of potato chips costs more than milk for children, and people rather buy the potato chips? So when you talk about the price of food, let's talk about greed, immorality, and the unethical conduct. Look at the profits by ConAgra. Look at the profits of Kellogg and all these other companies. That's the reason why food is rising and there's social unrest.
And it starts also, I have to do at least one word on Monsanto, right, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. we're 18 minutes into the program and we haven't bashed Monsanto.
I don't know if you got a chance to watch this, but I would suggest everyone taking a moment to watch this, and we'll discuss it in a future show. Farmer to Farmer, The Truth About GM Crops. Again, the name of the documentary is Farmer to Farmer, The Truth About GM Crops. And it starts with seeds that were really cheap that are now as much as $60 a bag, and no other choice but buying their stuff plus their insecticides, and how this in horrible company of Monsanto and Dow and these other companies have caused farmers to have to increase what we are now receiving as consumers because of their first lie.
Well, I agree, honey, but I want to come back to this a little because that does fit in.
Yes.
Because this is the type of nonsense a bunch of intellectuals paid $1 million by the food industry say. It makes sense. For as much as we all want to be a higher order of beings, if our baser needs are not met, a lot of other things no longer take precedence. How about one sentence? If you don't give me some goddamn food, I'm going to kill you. Isn't that what people are saying in these small countries who are starving? Either feed me or I'm going to break down the wall, steal all the food, and I'll kill anybody in my way when I have to feed my children. Why does that take 4 intellectual sentences and half a report to say what's obvious to a 12-year-old, right?
And who pays for them?
Yeah.
Do you think our tax dollars are paying for that too, Manny?
Uh-huh. So then to support it, they say things like in India a few years ago, a Western activist group dumped GM food in the middle of a city as a protest. But people swarmed over it and ate it. Of course, they hadn't eaten in 6 weeks. They would have eaten the cardboard Kellogg's boxes. And then they have the nerve to say, this has more success in a Whole Food parking lot where wealthy middle-class women and anti-science hippies can give themselves an intellectual placebo of what poor people want to eat. I mean, basically, they're saying it's okay if you're a wealthy middle-class person and anti-science hippie, if you want to give yourself an intellectual placebo, but poor people want to eat. Think about that for a moment. So I guess, I imagine the president's wife, the wives of every CEO, including the guys who wrote this article. This guy wrote the article is a wealthy PhD scientist being paid bundles by the industry who lives in an upper middle class or wealthy home, and I guarantee you his wife is not buying dollar meals for his children.
Or GMO. I will bet you anything she's eating organic, and I'll bet you every meal he has is organic. And if he doesn't, he's going to be sick, bottom line. But this means that Mrs. Obama and President Obama are anti-science hippies because they only allow organic in the White House.
Wait a minute. That means that George H.R. Bush
was an anti-science hippie.
Because Laura only allowed organic food, and lived so in Hillary Clinton, and lived so in Barbara Bush. Our last four presidents' wives refused to have any of this garbage, GMO food, all this MSG, high fructose corn syrup banned from the White House. But they have no trouble letting everybody else eat it. So I guess our country is run by a bunch of anti-science hippies, including this guy's wife. And I would like to follow him around for a week and see what he's eating before he pontificates about the poor, because he belongs in that great philosophy of let them eat cake.
Oh, absolutely.
Because this sounds like something Marie Antoinette would say.
Absolutely.
Do we have any clue as to who is funding this bunch of yahoos?
Everybody. When I started researching these guys, they try to say they're a purely academic institution from Harvard, Brandeis, every major East Coast university. Then you look at them deeper and who some of the people are on the board. They're all people who accept funding from major corporations. We know that Harvard's probably the worst prostitute in education. They had 1,800 professors caught taking bribes, several hundred in medical school. They basically are paid by them to sell drugs like statin drugs. And when Harvard was confronted by Senator Grassley and others in Congress about their policies, they said, we don't want to investigate this because we don't want to endanger our political our contributions and donations. So when you look at this list, literally everybody on this list is a member of the big food, big society. And let me tell you the type of things they're saying. It says, using just American farming, we could feed the world, but politics and culture get in the way. You know, ethanol was touted as a science solution to oil by Al Gore and the environmental activists, but it turned out it wasn't. And they go on and on about this, about how we could save the world. So what's the point of this science? Valid science solutions like genetically modified foods that can grow in difficult climates worldwide are protested by environmental activists. Then in some countries we have cultural pressure, various activist groups that want to outlaw, overtax, or regulate some kinds of foods. And it says there's a solution, and it isn't for rich Western countries with liberal guilt to demonize each other and steal more money from citizens and then redistribute it in typically inefficient fashion. I agree. The United States government buying genetically modified seeds, genetically modified foods, genetically modified wheat and corn, and forcing them on African and Indian nations, whether they want them or not, is demonizing. And when they talk about money, the worst waste of money in the United States is foreign aid in other countries. We're giving aid to Mexico, who send their poor to the United States to get welfare, and then they criticize us for not managing our money correctly when we're spending billions on feeding and medical treatment for illegal aliens that they don't care for. And the reason we're having a drug war in Mexico is because the drug cartels feed the people better, take care of them better, and they're more loyal to the drug culture than their own country, who starve them, feed them, and make them go on an exodus to the United States. So here we are being blamed for all this, and all this right-wing movement among the big corporations are saying that we as a people are to blame because of our liberal viewpoints? No. The wealthy corporations and our corrupt government are to blame for misspending our money on a million pork barrel projects, the worst of which are supporting foreign countries like this. So basically, every solution they offer is supported by this statement that I saw in four articles last week. It's, quote, "The solution is to let science solve the problem. To date, genetically modified foods haven't caused a single stomach ache despite over a decade in common use and 25 years of research." Well, let me raise my hand. Genetically modified foods gave me malignant cancer, and I ended up having two cancerous tumors removed from me. I had food intolerance. I was crippled. I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't do anything. Doctors told me I was going to die. I entered into one simple remedy in my life. I researched my health. I researched food. I stopped eating genetically modified foods, anything with MSG or other chemicals. I was out of a wheelchair within a short period of time. My health has improved every single year. I no longer have active Crohn's disease. I don't pass blood. I don't roll over in just dead pain after lunch, sweating like a pig and needing to go to a hospital. So how did I get rid of it? I got rid of it by not eating genetically modified foods. And they have the unmitigated gall to say this that hasn't caused a single stomach ache. I counseled no less than four people last week about health considerations involving how genetically modified foods are poisoning their families. One of them, a friend of Simon and Jan's, and I think she's told you what a difference it's made to her family to give up some of this stuff. Right, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there is no question. But unlike certain scientists who shall remain nameless, we in the quote green movement apparently have millions of dollars, and you know, we're just out to cause trouble. I mean, what a load of bullshit!
It really is. It's so horrible, Simon.
So I got another one for you. Oh, go ahead, Ashley. You first.
Okay. Because the science geek in me was so insulted by the fact that they made that statement, I, of course, you know me, Simon, I have to go do a little, I have to look at the actual data and pull it up for you guys. And the one that I would suggest people pulling up, if there's any question anywhere in your brain about the GMO foods, it was pulled up, a brief by Greenpeace. It's called Genetically Engineered BT Eggplant, Health Risks, Environmental Impacts, and Contamination from Field Trials. When you go through the list of what they found, they write it up as health concerns, because the concerns have to be, they're not ever allowed to say this is absolute, because first of all, they're only allowed a minimal amount of time to do testing. So if it's only a 30 to 90 day trial, even though they consistently find this over repeatedly, they're only allowed to say in their write up that they're health concerns. But the fact is, if they were allowed to run these tests for 2 years, as they should, and as the American people should have had on these particular GMO plants in the 90s before giving them to people, full trials that we could all read, it would have said absolutely, this is a concern no longer, this is a fact. One being that it is a potent interference with the immunological system. It causes problems within the mice, because that's all they could test. It's called Cry1AC protein, and it's very active within this genetically engineered product, and it attacks the small intestine. Guess what? Manny had cancer in the small intestine, and this absolutely attacks that protein, and it attacks the epithelial cells within the small intestine and then goes further down and into the blood.
Let me add to what Ashley's saying, and we're going to come back to your list. There was recently a test in Russia, and they tested hamsters with genetically modified food. Well, the first generation were so-so, they got sick, but the second one had fertility issues, and they dropped to the second and third generations. Apparently, all of them became, you know, basically infertile, and only one of them had children, and 40 of the pups that came around, of the pups that did have children in the second generation, the first group, 25% died. The next group, all of them were infertile except for one, and it goes on. And what happened, because this is what is important, okay? The Russian studies by Dr. Irina Ermakova, okay? She carried out experiments on 205, and they went on later, and half the babies from mother rats died from GMO soy within 3 weeks, okay? So she wanted to repeat the studies to verify the findings, but no one would give her any financial support. So finally, Ermakova was told not to do any more studies concerning GMO foods, and her documents were torn up and destroyed. So being a bright scientist, she asked her colleagues who were doing studies on GMO foods at the National Academy of Scientific Laboratories in Moscow, and unwittingly, because they didn't understand why she wanted, they found a 55% infant mortality rate with those rats and hamsters who were fed GMO soil. Every test has shown this. Every single one of them it shows this. So it gets back to, you know, basically what we were talking about before, which is where was my little article, the bad news? This is the last one on their list that shows up on every one of these articles. GM cotton and corn have been a fantastic successes. They have reduced insecticides overall and led to lower mycotoxin levels in our corn. But even if you don't care But even if you don't care about the environment or health, the economics of GM products can't be ignored. Ashley, I mean, that is such nonsense. It's not a
scintilla. Even if you don't care about environment or health, I mean, did they actually put that into one sentence?
Yes. You're looking at it on my computer.
I know.
First of all, am I correct, ladies and gentlemen? They use more pesticides, according to two studies in Arizona and Wisconsin.
I think the people writing up about these super weeds and all the farmers having their complaints must absolutely be anti-science hippies.
Oh, yeah. All the farmers in Arkansas and Iowa are anti-science hippies because the insecticides, of which they use five times more in genetically modified foods, it is so bad Roundup doesn't work anymore, which is Monsanto's pride and joy, and then having to go back to more dangerous ones like dioxin and all these other terrible things. So they're telling us they have reduced insecticides. There's not an American farmer who agrees with that statement. It is an absolute corporate lie.
Oh, Simon, did you get a chance to look at Farmer to Farmer yet? Because this one cracked me up.
I haven't, but trust me, it is on my to-watch list.
Okay. It starts off with a farmer. Now, please understand, I'm laughing because it's so absurd. The laughter comes from absurdity. The very first farmer, or one of the first farmers on this documentary, is from 10 years of observation of this Monsanto crop. And this gentleman went across farmer to farmers across the country interviewing farmers from their experiences of 10 years of using the GM crop. One of the farmers said, when I first started having super weeds, I called Monsanto to ask them what to do because I was so upset. He had spent so much money on this crop. And the Monsanto representative said, go out in your fields and hand pick them.
So the same group paid by Monsanto and the rest of the industry issued this statement, quote, science can make foods more resistant to pests, meaning more food on less land. It can make foods grow in difficult climates, meaning less transportation costs and resulting emissions that are better for the climate. Well, these various studies at Wisconsin and other places have shown that you can grow more food on a conventional farm than you can on a GMO farm.
Who also has that? There's a whole study done on that.
Right. There's all sorts of international studies. And when it says more resistance to pests, the super weeds and all the other things are disclosing, they are not making it more resistant to pests. The first set of pests die, then they lap it up, they transform a little bit. Nature makes a few adjustments, and they come charging back, and voila, super weeds and super bugs and infections in the hospital. Because guess what? Nature will conquer man ultimately every time. This more food on less land has been proven to be absolute nonsense. It can make foods grow in difficult climates. That's not true, because they're only finally coming out with a new supposedly climate-resistant form of corn now that's not been actively used. And as you point out, Simon, it takes more water to grow these. So if you have famine in a drought area, as we have in Africa right now, how would GMO plants solve that when there's no water? They'd die just like every other plant, right?
Right, but I want to go back to this superweed idea. You know, go out and pull them by hand.
Just go out and pull it.
You know,
it's your Poulon weed whacker.
Well, you know, that. I am being facetious here. I wonder if Monsanto has, entered into discussions with Husqvarna, you know, to produce a chainsaw weed whacker. Yeah, something that can handle those 30-foot-high monsters.
Oh, I it's just absurd. It really is.
I can
is.
See it now, the new movie, The Arkansas Chain Weed Whacker Super Weed Massacres.
I mean, these things are full trees. They're just, they're very frightening to look at, and there's nothing they can do about them. They start up, and they're full out, and, you know, they've had to increase employment. Well, I guess that's good for the country, except that, you know, what, Manny? It will increase employment,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, and then if for entertainment, we could have GMO Foods versus a John Deere tractor in a steel cage match. That would be a fun one, wouldn't it, Simon?
Oh, yeah, right.
But, you know, to think that this is limited to food, because we're going to come back, and we will get to Whole Foods.
And I definitely want to do Greenpeace again, but I guess I'll have to cover this another.
No.
Oh, okay, because this is a real big deal.
Well, no, we're going to come back to it in a moment before we go into the other foods. But first, I've got to just share this with you. There have been a variety of articles this week about vaccine safety reports should reassure doctors and parents. Well, for those people who have children who've been following this story around the nation, there's a large number of parents have joined together who accuse the vaccine makers of careless negligence and it's causing autism, diabetes, and other health problems in children. And it's become such a stink. There have been lawsuits filed, et cetera. The problem is that a number of years ago, to allow these vaccine makers to put out things that were untested, they passed the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. It was established in 1986 under the Ronald Reagan era, of course, of let the companies do what they want, okay? So anyway, to make a long story short, here's this report. It was issued Thursday by an independent panel of medical experts.
Well, that sounds impressive.
Yeah.
I'm going to believe this one.
Convened by the Institute of Medicine. That sounds...
What gets me right now, Manny, is what they're taking words, and in the wordsmithing, they're now using words that will make you believe it is the truth. And like for farming, it becomes sustainable. They use that word a lot, which confuses people with organic. And in this panel, it's independent, as in independent studies.
Well, yeah, well, you know, everybody like the Institute of Medicine rests and claim to be independent science-based analysis until you see where the funding comes from. So anyway, here we have this whole panel, and what do? They issue a report saying vaccines rarely cause serious side effects. When problems do arrive, they often occur in people with pre-existing immune system disorders. In other words, they're saying if you have a pre-existing immune system disorder, that's the reason why your baby or you are having problems with vaccines. And by the way, they're giving between 33 and 36 vaccines to a child between birth and 3 years old. My God, that, you know, you're talking about one a month of these very, very dangerous, untested vaccines. So what
right. Now, Manny, you're 67, I'm 55. I believe that in my day, I received something like 3 or 4, and that was it. Smallpox, polio, measles, and there was probably something else. So, you know, how did we get to over 30 today?
Well, aggressive marketing by the various companies who want to sell this stuff. And they've convinced the government that they're going to solve all these health problems. And in many instances, they've caused as many as they've solved. And the worst part of it, why I'm bringing this up, is, and here's the initial criticism from people on the outside looking at this, but a final review of the lengthy report shows not enough scientific evidence exists to guarantee the safety of vaccines. And that's the bottom line. It says they didn't review the scientific evidence on whether safety profiles of vaccines change when they're given in combination. So in other words, if you give three vaccines at the same time, is that dangerous? No. They didn't really bother to study it. But when you break down how they did it, it was just terrible. And the majority of the people who discussed, I'll give you a quote from the opposition. The most important finding is that in the majority of cases, when they looked at the scientific literature, there was an inadequate evidence for them to accept or reject causation. In other words, they basically came up with a conclusion that wasn't justified by the facts. And one of the critics said she disagreed with the findings because some of the, particularly the vaccines, cannot trigger type 1 diabetes. And one of the reasons is this has only become a problem in the last couple of years. You've seen the news, diabetes, et cetera, is increasing, and it's happening now. And so basically, what they did is they went back and they went through 1,000 scientific articles to assess this alleged safety.
Ones they chose.
Right, and they went back to 1994, okay, which is, you know, just about the time GMOs were approved. So they basically looked at old surveys and tests that were done by what? Industry insiders paid to do tests to benefit the industry. So they looked at 1,000 paid-for tests by doctors were paid for by the industry. And in many instances, these were ghostwritten because as we publish in our various articles, and those who haven't read it, go to our site, howtoeliminatepain.com, or go to Blogger Newsnet, and you'll see articles on how all these phony articles are written by paid-for ghostwriters by companies called DreamWrite, who get $25,000 to ghostwrite an article for a doctor who gets paid to design it. So they're relying on this to say that they're blaming on pre-existing conditions. So let's skip for a second. Why? Because this information will be used to defend claims by mothers with sick children. So the government fund does not pay a mother with autism any money because it may have been caused by a vaccine, even if it was caused. So all they're trying to do is save the industry and government money by refusing to pay anything. So the reasons for this test are basically to protect industry. And one of the things pointed out is it doesn't even address Gardasil, which is a vaccine that's designed to protect humans from strains of the papillomas virus. Well, that's one of the ones that's been linked in a variety of reports of blood clots and even to some deaths. But they didn't even bother to do that. Why? Because there are no real tests. But yet they make a broad brushstroke statement that vaccines are safe when they rely on industry information. You might as well go to Monsanto and ask them, you know, are GMO foods safe?
Just go to a ghostwriter.
Now, coming back to your GMO list, because this goes back to your list of GMO stuff.
Actually, I wanted to take just one moment, just one moment, to finish something on what is being said by these people. Nothing was ever said on the fact that, first of all, there's serious allergies that occur. For example, one can cause anaphylactic shock. Where is that in there? Does that say that anywhere? Threatening allergic reactions. Does it say anywhere in that report?
No.
Does it say anywhere in that report that the varicella vaccine can cause pneumonia, meningitis, shingles, chickenpox, or other conditions? No, it does not. Does it say anywhere in that report that in 2003 in Japan they canceled giving the MMR vaccine to children in Japan because 4 children died shortly after receiving the MMR vaccine. So in Japan, to protect their people, they stopped the vaccine to examine the vaccine. Again, it is 3 vaccines given at one time, which is an overload to children. And nowhere does it say that there are lawsuits in the United States where 400 parents had similar, across the country, similar incidents of what happened in the vaccine after it was given to the children. Now, we're just discussing the MMR suits. And we're going to get into another show. I want to do a whole show on vaccines, because the vaccines and what's causing the problem, because vaccines are good. You have to have vaccines to protect the children. Neither of us are saying don't give vaccines. What we're saying is you got to examine the actual drugs, and you start looking at the list of what is making up those drugs. Oh, my God, Simon, I was horrified.
Yeah.
Right down to the fact that fetal tissue from aborted tissue is being used in some of these drugs, in addition to high levels of aluminum, high levels of mercury. Examine the drugs. Don't cancel all the vaccines. Fix the problem. Don't bury it with a lie, which is this article. It's a burial of lies.
So I researched the committee who did it. They're all upstanding heads of medical schools. Some of them have written 200 papers, all of them industry-sponsored. Some work for the FDA. I mean, on paper, they look just like the cream of the crop, but they're all basically funded by the government, which has a vested interest in the FDA, and the industry, who doesn't want this information coming out. And again, it gets back to our point. Be careful of these surveys. Don't believe everything you read, because quite frequently they're written for the sole purpose of basically justifying the industry and protecting them from litigation. So when this comes around, they're going to be shocked to find out how many experts disagree with them, because it will show up during litigation. So again, the government and the industry will do every self-serving method, no matter what it is, Medicare, Medi, food, drugs, anything to protect themselves. And so anyway, to make a long story short, I want to move on to an area, because sooner or later we've got to get to fun stuff. And this is the tip-off. We've talked a little bit about...
Manny, I'm sorry, because we're running late, so of course we're going on with this. I'm going to cover what else is in these GM plants from the Greenpeace later.
I'd like to do it after this article.
Okay.
ConAgra was sued over basically claiming their food is natural. Oh, yeah, Hungry Man's natural, all 150 ingredients in it. High fructose corn syrup is natural, and there's subways from L.A. to Mars, but that's a whole other issue. So basically, would you believe that 20% of the food is marked natural, and it isn't natural, 23%. So we're just trying to figure out what natural means, because part of discussing shopping at Trader Joe's and Whole Foods is understanding natural. So a large law firm, our old friend Mel Weiss's law firm, which is now Milberg and LLP, sued ConAgra over Wesson Oil, saying it doesn't qualify as natural. And the whole argument is you cannot say something is natural if it contains genetically modified foods. Well, of course, the industry claims that genetically modified foods are nature identical, so that allows them to use the word natural. So if this loss is successful, you know, 90% of the processed foods, they say 70, I say 90, basically contain genetically modified foods. So basically, how can you say this is natural if it has chemical, not only does it have genetically modified foods, the ones that say natural, have basically every chemical in the world. And Ashley, of course, reminds me, and I was going to let you do this, Ashley, there is no legal definition of natural except for meat and poultry, okay? And basically, the government has allowed this as a loophole for everybody. And so, Ashley, I want you to talk about the other problems with genetically modified foods that people find in these so-called foods that are marked at Whole Foods and Trader Joe's as natural. So go back to your list.
The one on the Greenpeace or the group from
Greenpeace?
Okay, so the list on the Greenpeace, which I found very, very, very important. It went on to, again, this is a little science geeky, but I'll clean it up. It says BT eggplant contains 15% less kilograms per calories per 100 grams of different alkaloid content. What does that mean? It means 15% of this is going to interfere with your acid-base pH, which is the thing that keeps your body in balance. 15% of it is altered by having this bee. Now, we're talking about eggplant, but it's the same across the board with everything I've seen with the reports on BT, which is BT is your GMO. It's your genetically engineered product, which is going to interfere. Again, alkaloid content is your acid-base pH. That's the thing that keeps your body in balance, the main homeostasis of your body. Now, when they fed this to the animal, they found that the various parameters in the blood cells of the chemistry were altered in the goats and rabbits. What does that mean? It's going to interfere with your blood cells, with your blood tissue. Oh, let's see. There's leukemia. Now that nobody's saying this, but it's your blood. It's interfering with your blood cells. In cows and milk, the composition of the cow and its milk were changed by 10 to 14% when given this BT eggplant. The liver was changed. Feed intake was changed during the broiler chickens. It converted everything within fish. So then it went on to say they found two antibiotic marker genes within this particular plant. Antibiotic resistance is recognized to be a major health problem in what? We have this antibiotic resistance occurring right now. Superbugs. So here we have BT, GMO, antibiotic resistance. Now, why do you need to put this in a plant? Why do you have to put antibiotic resistance in a plant that then is going to be altering the animal, who then you eat, altering the plant that you then eat? So then again, you go back to, why do we need to eat GMO, and how natural is GMO? Do you find in nature, Manny, let me put some antibiotic resistance in that piece of berry that I'm eating? Is that natural?
No. They remind me of everything that's wrong with the sports right now, with the proliferation of a variety of drugs. It basically just allows people to, you know, to break the rules. So here we have a situation where you've got to use drugs to fit a square peg into a round hole. I mean, what good does that do society?
And then environmentally, they're putting the insecticide in it. So you're altering now when we say it's altering everything in the environment, it means things like right now they want to put a change in their wheat that's going to throw off a pheromone that's going to affect the aphids. And you go, yay, one less pesticide. Well, let's see. That's going to change the fact that we're no longer having ladybugs. Oh, my gosh, that's already happened. Then it's going to change the birds that feed on the ladybugs. Oh, they're dying too. And then it's going to change the butterflies that are feeding on those aphids, that are feeding on those bugs, that are feeding on. See, so it happens to have this whole long chain reaction of what's occurring based on the GMO. So when you say, oh, well, it's just something in the environment, it doesn't affect me, it affects everything. How about the fact that it affects the bees and the pollen and the pollen and the honey?
Yeah, I think you're hitting on a very, very fundamental aspect. What you're doing is you're fiddling with the food chain, and when that happens, a hard disaster happens.
Exactly.
Isn't that called the butterfly effect, or whatever it is? That you know, if a butterfly flaps its wings, in the Amazon, it affects Europe. And to some extent, there is some truth to all that. But you know, to make people understand the difference, let's try and separate it. When they say that something's a conventional crop or conventional food, that means they have an heirloom, a time-honored plant, and the only difference between that and other stuff right now is the use of pesticides. Well, if you see something as conventionally grown, you've got to ask yourself, how much pesticides does it have? For example, in our books we cite where apples, for example, can be sprayed as much as 36 times, and so are a variety of other foods. So in many instances, they wax it and they do all this other stuff. So a conventional fruit may be nice because it's not genetically modified, but it can be so soaked in pesticides that it's bad. So then we have our genetically modified plants, which we discuss endlessly, have gene alterations with Bacillus thuringiensis, a BT toxin, or an E. coli. that is bad because the genes are split and the DNA of that fruit or that vegetable contains dangerous bacteria that hurts your body. And despite what the industry says, it has too much pesticides. And as we pointed out for the last hour, that basically it takes more pesticides to get GMO out, and they use more water. So, and they're basically fertilized with from manure lagoons. So the GMO foods are the worst. Conventional are probably the second worst because of the amount of the pesticides. The natural foods are, to me, the in their own way, because of their name, worse because they're misleading. Natural may include genetically modified foods. When I look at these products marked natural, I see sometimes 25, 30 ingredients, multiple versions, high fructose corn syrup, which isn't natural, MSG, which isn't natural. So since there's no rules or limitations on what's natural in foods, you can't believe anything that's natural. You have to assume that it's GMO, or at best conventional, but I can assure you it's full of chemicals and pesticides, the rest of them. The last one on the list, of course, is organic, which has no pesticides and no chemicals. Yeah, we see a lot of critics. There's this Misha Popoff, who is paid by the industry, who claims that organic food's a myth. Well, you know, it's funny. Our friend Barbara Peterson from FarmWords calls herself the bullshit meter. Well, I understand how she feels because
she's so funny.
And I love her for it because it's true. My body tells me it's bullshit because if I eat GMO foods and all these natural foods, I become deathly ill. I turn white. I start perspiring. I get incredible abdominal pain. And Ashley has to put me to bed for a few days and take care of me. And so I don't have to ask a study. I don't have to argue this point, and neither do most of my friends. And as I said, Simon, we have, and in my case, I've been counseling longer than Ashley, probably 4 or 5 years. I've talked to literally
hundreds. Wait a minute, I've been counseling for how many years?
Counseling me, but I'm talking about people on the Internet.
Okay. All right.
We won't include your medicine. But for the last 5 to 6 years of my life, I've spent counseling people with Crohn's disease, IBD, and all various forms of intestinal problems, ulcers, about how this gave me cancer and how it affects them. And I've talked to literally hundreds of people. I've seen hundreds. There's over 5 million now with Crohn's, and a growing number of all these other studies tell me that these people know that this is untrue because it's killing them too. So before we move on to the stores, right now, the basic position is that people who see labeled GMOs won't eat them. And basically, there's deceptive trade practices, according to most authors, designed to make GMO food more acceptable. They feel it works on the uninformed, but if you're informed and you understand, you look at labels, you know that the opposite of what they're telling is true. So in the United Kingdom, for example, they did a recent survey, and basically 90% of the people said that they won't eat GMO. And as one of them pointed out, one of the scientists pointed out, at least with smoking, the associated cancer risk can be reversed by stopping the next generation from smoking. But if the integrity of the food system is impacted, the downstream effects will not be able to be reversed. So that's the reason why we all press to keep the GMO out of the food. So,
oh, you hippie you.
Yeah.
Simon, you hippie you.
as an anti-science hippie, I go to Whole Foods periodically with Ashley and Trader Joe's. And one of the things I noticed, because I'm going to talk about a family favorite, is pasta. You know, basically you can buy pasta directly from a true maker in Italy, and sometimes you have to research them, and you'll find it's all basically organic because they don't allow genetically modified foods. One farmer tried to grow them in northern Italy, and he was nearly stoned. I mean, they basically stopped him. But when you go to that aisle in, like, Whole Foods, there are, like, 7 or 8, 9 different, pastas. Garden Time clearly is marked organic, and then you have the pure Italian ones that are basic organic, and the other ones don't say anything. They say natural, but they have GMO wheat in it. So you can go look at any product in Whole Foods, and you'll find conventional, natural, and organic side by side, And you've got to look at the labels carefully. Like, I walked up the other day and Ashley was going through all the pasta, despite we normally buy one brand, looking at all of them, trying to tell the difference between them. Right, Ash?
I always do. Part of the reason it's an always for me is because I never know which day a company's going to change, what they're going to either change their label, and it's going to look like the same package, and like they did with the soy silk. It's I think it was Silk that did that, right?
It's Silk brand.
And so I never just take for granted that day. Well, gee, this is today, and you know, no, because it's the safety of what I bring home and what I'm feeding my family, and that's a responsibility that I take the moment I put that in the cart, and the moment I take it home and I cook it. And I wanted to read the definition of conventional, which I thought cleared this up for me 100% that I wanted to share. Conventional processing. Chemical additives used may be harmful to health, can extract nutrients, and add potential toxins. Wow, Whole Foods, let me run there. That's what conventional processing means. What do you think of that, Simon?
I think that I'm getting very irate.
doesn't that get you? Conventional made me feel comfortable. It's conventional. It's every day. Clever word.
Right. Now, I look at it at a slightly, higher level, shall we say. Obviously, a producer has the option to put we'll call it a vanity label, saying all organic. I think that labeling should be mandatory. If you're using GMO, it should be mandatory to say GMO. But, could you see that getting passed by the FDA?
Because people like ConAgra, I think it's a fine example. In Oregon, when they were trying to pass labeling laws, they went in there with all of their might and all of their money, because money seems to be priority over a human life. And they went in and they stopped it with the lobbyists from labeling. And every single time labeling comes up and labeling occurs, right down to the President of the United States right now, and I'm ashamed to say that because he is our president. And we have a president, and when we vote for that president, we need to look every time. How do they handle our food? Primal. Are they accepting lobby money? Primal. Every single one of our presidents seem to think it's okay to take that lobby money and not put a label on it. Put the label on it. There should be a huge sign in Whole Foods that says, conventional processing, chemical additives used may be harmful to health, can extract nutrients and add potential toxins. They know that's what that means. If you're going to put that there, put that sign up. Let people have that choice. I'm going to eat toxins that are harmful to me today. If it's natural processing, no synthetic additives or colors or chemical preservatives or solvents. But it can contain GMO. Put that sign up because they know that's the truth. And the truth in labeling, you're absolutely right, Simon. I also pulled up a thing because I thought, I want to understand natural and conventional. I'm a little confused on it. And so I thought, let me look at a preservative, natural versus conventional. Preservative, salt, vinegar, spices. Now, the spices can, of course, have lots of pesticides and all kinds of stuff in it. Salt can have things in it too, but it's still natural. Conventional. Now, the same thing with the preservative going into your conventional. It can contain sodium nitrite, sulfur dioxide, calcium propionate, and sorbic acid. These are chemicals. Color.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I have any of those in my spice rack.
Yeah, really? Would you throw a little sodium nitrite in it?
You've got a point. Sodium nitrite has been proven to be a carcinogen.
Absolutely. So when you have that conventional and it says, conventional, nice word, safe, I'm at Whole Foods, I'm at Trader Joe's, might as well go to the 99-cent store. So then you have, let's go down the list on, there's just a couple of them. Next one's colorings. turmeric, annatto, A-N-N-A-T-T-O. Conventional, yellow number 5, red number 50, etc., etc., colorings that have been proven to be toxic, cancerous. Flavorings, natural, salt, spices, vanilla. Can also have GMO. I mean, this means when you're saying natural, understanding that natural list, they don't list the fact that it's GMO because they're putting that into your natural, which is not. Flavoring conventional, though, is going to be artificial flavors, hidden chemicals in your food. Emulsifiers, lecithin, natural. Is it really natural, Manny, lecithin?
No.
Okay. But
lecithin, among other things, is a vehicle to hold MSG.
Okay, so we know it's that, but they're saying it's natural. Okay. Mono and diglycerides go in the conventional form. Oil is the worst. Oil, we could do a whole show on oil. Oil extractions, cold press, expressor press. What does that mean, Manny? Do you know what that means?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I believe one of them, though, if I recall, cold press is the old-fashioned machine, and espresso is the steam machine, but I'm not
100%. Right. That means that that's natural. But when you use conventional, oh, I love this. In your oil extraction, Simon, are chemical solvents. Chemical solvents.
Oh.
Okay. Now, flour milling. Hammer or stone mill unrefined. Now, you go over to your conventional and you've got refined, germ bran removed, all the nutrient is gone, bleached. What chemical is used in that? There's your conventional. Now that, to me, clarified a lot. When you go through that alone, you say, do I want anything conventional in my body? I don't think so.
Right. I mean...
How can that be allowed even on the shelf?
Right. I mean, every household has a thing of bleach. You use it in the bathroom. Personally, I have never tried cooking with it.
You know, one of the things I found really interesting with a friend of ours from South America who proceeded to say that we were discussing sugar when we were putting the books together, and one of our first books we were putting together, and she said that she didn't know that sugar wasn't brown. And she didn't know flour wasn't brown. And then when she came to this country, she thought, oh, you know, something was wrong with me because we were having brown sugar and brown flour. Huh, I'm in America now. And then she also, along with everybody else, became ill, eating all this processed food. Why do we have to have white flour? Simon, would it bother you to know that the flour isn't perfect in color?
No. No, it absolutely wouldn't. And I think that if you look at the history of flour, the whole, you know, bleaching white flour deal came about through vanity more than anything else. But now it's become just part of what our society is.
I know, and I think I keep going back to when Manny and I were at the farmer's market, and this, to me, it gets back to the color of things. We were standing picking corn from the organic corn section, and the corn looks horrible. I got to admit, it looks pretty bad. But I know that it's organic because, hey, some bugs have been eating this thing. You know, this means, and they're not falling over dead, and their guts aren't being, you know, killed immediately. I know that it's going to be safe in my gut, right? It's an organic, natural, actual, honest to God, God made this. And so some kid was standing by helping his mom shuck it and looked at the corn and went, oh, Mom, look, there's a worm in it. Mom, you know, tossed down the corn and dragged her son off. And I looked at Manny and I said, Manny, that's not what we need to be teaching our kids. We need to say, of course there's a worm in it. That's part of the evolutionary process. I don't have to have perfect corn or every other...
And if the worm's still living, it probably means that the product's safe to eat.
I know. It's a much safer thing, and it's ugly. Okay, fine. I don't care what it looks like as long as I know it's a healthy piece of corn. It's like the flour. If the flour isn't, if my flour was green and I now know that's the color of my flour and it's organic and it's natural, which we know it's not, but say that's what it was. Or it's sometimes green, sometimes brown. As long as I know it's organic, I don't care who needs to bleach it. The only person is the profiteer who has to use that chemical.
See, I fit a little differently with this. I grew up here in Los Angeles where you basically have all of this basic, wonderful, fresh fruit growing up. And I'm used to food looking different and not being perfect, as Ash is describing. So I never expected food to get perfect. As time went on, it just got bleached more and more and more and more and more until it reached a point where I was starting to think I was buying plastic food. And the reality was I really was buying plastic food, but I really didn't realize it at the time nor place enough significance in it. And that's the shame of it is, and people who live in Iowa and all the rest of it, they pick irregular-looking corn, they pick irregular-looking vegetables every day, and they love them. So you need to change your thoughts from buying what looks perfect to you to what is perfectly healthy for you, and the two of them are not identical. And that's where I have problems with Whole Foods. For example, Ashley and I were looking for some organic strawberries, and I pointed out to her, you can tell the difference because of the color of the label is different. They use the green label on the organic, and they use sort of a yellowish label on the others. But the differences are subtle, and what they do is they put them next to each other because they don't care which one you buy as long as you buy one.
Right, if somebody picks it up. And sometimes the conventional is actually more expensive than the organic.
Yeah.
And if I go from Trader Joe's, which is a block away here, to Whole Foods, the difference in price is vast. I can buy it cheaper most of the time at Trader Joe's, but not necessarily. So I check out pricing from place to place.
Yeah, and you have to because sometimes you swear they're the same bananas, but they may be a dollar cheaper at one store than they are at the other store. So you can't really rely on which one's going to be consistently cheaper because they fool you. But what bothers me most is this knack of putting all these foods side by side. So it makes it more difficult to do. And I laugh with Ash an awful lot. You go to, like we were at Whole Foods the other day, and I pointed out to her that as you go through the door, they have like conventional cantaloupes from Central Valley, organic cantaloupes from XYZ, cantaloupes that we don't know who their mother is from, you know, here. So at the end of the day, you've got five or six different products that are the same cantaloupe from different origins, and unless you're a very skilled shopper, it doesn't make sense to the average person. I get people every day ask me, well, what does this stuff mean? I don't understand it. And that when people in our society go to the market and they have trouble understanding what's in the market, oh my God, that's a terrible statement. And that's where we are right now.
Although there's one thing that I've discovered that I do want to share. And this may be, maybe everybody knows this and I don't, Simon. I don't know. It just took me a while to get to this one. And actually, we've put this in the book, so I've known this for a while. But I went back and sort of refined it a little bit. And it means that there's an 8-digit number that's put on your product and for your fruits and vegetables. And generally, if it's 8 digits, it means on that label, it's genetically modified. A 9-digit carrying means that it is organic. Now, in order to test that, what I've done is, because market to market, it seems like there's inconsistency, no surprise, is that I will pick up a conventional and I'll look at the numbers. Then I pick up the same, like I'll pick up an orange that's conventional and look at the numbers. And I pick up an orange that's organic and look at the numbers. And then I will consistently see that the conventional has X amount of numbers, the organic has X amount of numbers. Now, the sad thing to me is that, why do I have to play this game while I'm at the market? The people at the market know the truth, because barcodes have been around for a very long time, and it's a Morse code. It's a Morse code that, again, tells them what country it's from, it tells them whether it's organic or it's conventional, and they know the truth. They know that this thing actually came from Guatemala, even though we're putting Mexico on it, you know, because it's sent up to Mexico and then processed out of Mexico and then sent to the States. So, and same from China. Sent from China to Mexico, like we talked about on Thursday's show, and then repackaged in Mexico or whatever country, and then, or Canada, and then sent to the United States. But the barcodes will actually, that to me is a big hint, which I probably should have shared earlier on the shows, and I apologize to the listeners. But that is, that's the key. If you start looking at the digit numbers on the fruit or on the vegetables, and if you find a better program, please call us or call in and let us know so that we can share that with our listeners. And again, they have certain codes that are used from country to country, and it's too late in the show to really get into that. But
yeah. So the bottom line to all of it is that they're being dishonest about the source of their food. They're hiding things that come from China under other labels. They are just basically being deceptive. And the hardest part about this is they're forcing Americans to stop and read labels, most of whom either don't want to or don't have the time. So I look at it as, what's the best way to eliminate problems to the American public? Just make it hard for them to do when they're busy and they have children to go home to, you know, lives to live and other things. And guess what? Americans don't have time to find the truth, and that's what they're banking on. But if we all get together and we do this and we stand up and we compel them to produce better quality food, not to lie to us, not to deceive us, not to use us as profit centers, but remember that we're Americans too. We're not corporate pawns. That we can change it. So our message is join the food revolution. You can go to howtoeliminatepain.com and read more than 90 different articles. You can buy our books. You can jump in, or you can follow a variety of other people, from Jeffrey Smith to Ronnie Cummings to a variety of different organizations. We're not alone in this. The whole country is going to join again, and we're going to force another revolution in our food if we have to dump all of the genetically modified food into Boston Harbor, which is what we're suggesting in our book. It's time to rebel. It's time to join the food revolution. Simon, thank you for a wonderful week.
And thank you, Manny and Ashley. And,
Simon, I have to say one thing before we go. I just have to. Just because we were on the fruit section, at least that's where my mind was, and 65% of our papaya comes from Mexico. It is banned right now. Please, there's a huge recall on papaya. If you have papaya at home right now, there is a massive recall on papaya. Do not eat it. Take it back to the store. And there's also a huge other recalls going on right now, which we'll cover on Thursday's show.
Right. Actually, you said it for me. We will be back next Thursday. Our program is scheduled for noon Eastern. I will have an advert put up on Blogger News Network. So thank you, listeners, and please join us again on Thursday. Till then, goodbye.